70-something. It's substantial.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the kind of thing where I flew. And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. We've got a lot of topics today. It's one of those really very busy, filled shows.
Yeah, sounds great, Felicia. We're going to get an update on Guillermo, right?
We're going to get a tropical storm update on, an update on Tropical Storm Guillermo. That's definitely one thing. We were going to have our civil defense person come in here and or call in here and give a speaking, but there's been another fire going on now in Poipu. So that was more pressing than the radio. So they're out there working on that. I want to get them in here and talk. You know, we've been having a lot of fires. We had one just a few days ago to where they had to close the road down, you know.
Wow.
So that's not really very normal.
In a lot of places, of course, you've seen about the fires in California right now.
Well, tell me for a moment.
Well, there's looks like three major complexes going on in Northern California alone. And the one just north of San Francisco is the biggest in years, they're saying. I wish I could remember. I think maybe the biggest since the Rim Fire. But hundreds of square miles have been burned already, and 13,000 people have been evacuated.
Mm. Blessings on them. I've seen Facebook pictures on Facebook. I know Montana seems to be on fire as well. There's normal to have fires in the summertime, but they're getting just more and more fierce because of the dry weather that's been persistent.
Right, that multi-year drought.
Multi-year drought.
Sure, that just sets the stage.
Sets the stage. So here we do have Tropical Storm Guillermo still coming. It's weakening and it's passing to the north. I'm just kind of speaking off of what I've watched and looked at on the weather channels. So it's going to be going above us, and it's not going to be an intense hurricane, thank goodness. Rough surf and rip currents are what really should be very evident. Gusty winds and heavy rains to begin tomorrow, impacting mostly the highlands of Maui and Hawaii. But Kauai, it should be here by Thursday. There's a lot of ways people can always prepare for dealing with these very heavy rains. One of which is loose and flying objects like yard equipment, furniture, different things that might be sitting around that can be picked up and thrown into the house, break a window, that sort of thing. I know that it's always a good idea to not have a big, heavy schedule for Thursdays. For the day that it's going to come. So, for example, Waipa, where, you know, I'm one of those that goes and makes poi typically on Thursday with them. I called ahead of time, and they are canceling because of the heavy rain. We still very often will get flash flooding, and it's easiest for our civil defense to have us all off the roads and kind of hunkering down.
I was looking at the National Hurricane Center cones, and as of now, it looks like just about 10% chance that we'll be affected by tropical storm force winds.
So, which is how heavy?
Ooh.
I think that's like 72. That's what my advisor right here. How much? 90 to 72?
No, 30-something to 70-something.
30-something to slip my trampoline over. I was at a really wonderful party the other day, and it was a wedding party, and talking to some people, I looked around the room, and there was maybe one or two people that were around for the last hurricane. Most people had been on the island for less than 10 years, and I'm really looking forward to having civil defense in here so we can talk about all the safety steps. We really do have a very on it group with warning us. They have phone calls where you get, you know, you need to register your phone, but they'll call you and tell you what's happening. It's really important for people to learn where to be on high ground. You're part of CERT, is that correct,
Marshall? I am part of CERT. I have to admit I've not been very active recently.
And CERT stands for Civilian Emergency...
Citizens Emergency Response Team.
Team. Right. So there are certain groups around, and they work to help things a lot. I was mentioning Waipaw. No poi on Thursday. This Thursday, don't go down and do the work, but the Mango Festival that they have planned for Sunday, August 9th, is still on, and that's usually just a wonderful event, really worthwhile going, music, and it's so beautiful down there along the fish ponds just in front of the oceans at the far side of Hanalei. It's a fundraiser that helps keep their learning center going.
Yes. To me, it was worth it to go last year just to eat mangoes.
Yeah. Mangoes and lots of other food there, all local vendors. And
Mango music.
Another thing that is happening this weekend, there's the sandcastle contest on Saturday in Hanalei Bay. Every year it just gets more and more beautiful. It starts in the morning, I think around 8. It usually seems to be over around 2-ish, but some people are very, very talented.
Yeah, we have some world-class sandcastle builders on this island. It really is amazing.
It is. It's really amazing. Today is Law 132, the 132nd day that the protectors have been up there on Mauna Kea, making a stand for the sacred nature of the mountain, not really wanting a heavy 18-story telescope being built there. You know, I think part of the concern, too, is a 5,000-gallon tank of mercury and other toxic chemicals that, you know, you get an earthquake or any kind of thing like that, you know, can crack. We heard about what was going on Sand Island. So
what's that for, a big tank of chemicals?
To run the telescope. They need it. You know, like mercury is something very important for floating the mirror, and there's a lot. It's a lot of science and technology. And, you know, when I'm thinking about them, you know, they probably will have some impact by this tropical storm because they're about 9,000 feet up the mountain. Late last week, the Department of Land and Natural Resources, their enforcement came in and arrested 7 of them, sent about 6 others away. But within a couple of hours, the next group was in behind them. There's a lot of commitment on that stand. And
do they still not have tents up there?
Yes.
Yes, they don't.
Yes, they don't. But there is still the hale. There's still the building that they constructed. I was actually there when they constructed that building. So that is, there's a wood hale that's there. And so it's a much smaller group that's up there right now, but they're there. And in alignment with that topic, this Sunday, August 9th, on Oahu, there is a unity march on Kalakaua Avenue, and it's a unity amongst a lot of these different layers of concerns, whether it is overdevelopment, you know, too much pesticides, the mountain, many different things. They're going down Kalakaua, ending at Kapiolani Park. And I'm going to go over there for that. It's pretty interesting. We have so many. It's kind of fun. And I'm going to be going to the International Astronomers Union Convention at the Hawaii Convention Center the next day. I'll be there 8:10. Okay. I'm sure that they don't mean to be hurting the Hawaiian culture. I'm sure it's something that's pretty challenging for them. But I do have a press pass from KKCR, and I'll go in and I'll see what they're doing. And so that whole convention is August 3rd to 14th. I'm going to be there on August 10th. We had, I guess there was a big demonstration outside of it, a very uplifting and positive, you know, not peaceful demonstration. But I saw that some of the main people, Auntie Val, she's in the studio. I love this woman. You're going to put the headphones on. Come on, sit, do it. I've known Auntie Val Wong since I was about 22 years old. Do you realize that? We worked together at Hanalei School. And so who I have in here is Auntie Val. And then Uncle Calvin Safri's daughter, Can you say hi into the mic? You got to be right up there against it, and you can pull it over to you, and tell us your name and tell us about your father. I'm sorry that he's passed.
Aloha, my name is Val. I moved back from the Big Island in December to take care of my father. He was diagnosed with cancer November 5th of 2014. Doctors gave him six to 9 months. He did awesome. He pulled through for 8 months.
What kind of cancer did he have?
Liver, lung, and brain.
Oh, my. So when they found it, it was fully metastasized.
Yeah, he was stage four.
And, well, I'm just very, very sorry.
Thank you.
Can you tell us about your dad? He was born in Hanalei, yeah?
Yes.
And I want you to put your mouth up to the mic. So the house where Waipa is that, you know, Calvin is brothers with Ke Aloha, correct?
Yes.
And Val, you are a Safri?
Yes.
Okay, can you pass her the mic? Val Wong.
Yes.
I did not know that.
Yes, that's my brother.
Oh, my gosh. I am so sorry. I've lived here for 30-something years, and I see everybody, and I brought up Uncle Calvin last week, and I had two people call, and the week before, two people call in wanting to know more, and I get shame for, say, all the extension of the family, because I might not have it right. Like, I didn't even know he was your brother. So tell us about what he was like when you were children. Is he older than you?
No, he's below me.
Okay. So what was life like?
Life was good. We had six siblings. And
can you tell us? Ke Aloha, you?
Was my older brother, Joe Merzberg.
Oh.
That's another.
I didn't know that. That was brother with that. Okay.
Say Joe Merzberg. I have a male wardies. I have Mapuana, I have Gordon, that's Ke Aloha, and myself.
Ah. And so...
And I have another sister on Oahu. Her name is Rose Angeles.
Okay. Yeah. And I know Ke Aloha, he is like a living encyclopedia of knowing the genealogy. He's got everything mapped out. Heavy in his brain. What family is your mother from?
Merzberg, yes.
And I know somebody of your family is West Side, is that correct? Or are you all North Shore?
North Shore, yeah.
Okay. And I have Val and Val. So, Val, I'm assuming you're named after Val?
No.
On my mom's side.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mine is Valendy.
Okay. Okay.
That's Valerie Ann.
Okay. Valerie Ann, thank you for coming home for your father. And you have a brother, correct?
I have two brothers.
And their names are?
The oldest is Calvin Safri Senior, Jr., and then Robert Safri.
And do they live on Kauai?
Calvin lives in Anahola, and Robert lives on the Big Island.
Okay, because I know the Anahola folks are listening in right now. Can you tell people where they might be able to, I believe it's Waioli Church, 9 a.m. Last week I said it wrong. I said 11, so it's 9 a.m. Friday the 14th?
Yes.
Right.
And what should they bring or what can they expect? What's the day going to go like?
It's going to be from 9 a.m. to 12. 9 a.m. to 10 will be just viewing. He's cremated, though.
Mm-hmm.
And then 11 to 12, that's when Kahu will go on with the ceremony. After that, we will have luncheon outside.
And where will he be laid to rest?
Hanalei Bay.
Hanalei Bay, okay. He's going to have lots of family and friends in Hanalei Bay. So I think of him as a fisherman.
Yes, he is.
That's what I think of him the most. If somebody says Calvin Safri to me, I think of him at Blackpot Park, bringing in fish. Mm-hmm. What would you like to be able to share about him?
My dad was an ocean and a mountain kind of person. He loved hunting, but fishing was his number one.
Yeah, he was very, very talented and very kind. He seemed to me like a father to many.
Yes.
And I see he's kind of splashed all over Facebook, you know, right recently, people putting pictures up. And did he have anything he might want to be sharing with people? As he was passing, was he okay? What was he thinking about?
He was actually normal the day, that day of that night when I called my brother to come and help me. He was talking. Until about Thursday morning, early morning, about 1:30, that's when he went unresponsive with me.
So we at least know that he was conscious all the way through and being able to be surrounded by the love of his family. I'm getting nods in here. I see tearful faces. And the community loves him. And I was asked specially to get family in here to speak for him, and I appreciate that you both have come in. Is there anything that you would like to share out? I know you've got lots of children and grandkids. Okay, she's having a hard time. Everybody's having a hard time. Any particular thing that's important to you, even that you maybe want to use this moment to share on Kauai Community Radio? It's all over the island, and actually we've got people from around the world and across the state listening in, especially Hawaii Island. Where are you from on Hawaii Island, Val?
Right now I'm living in Anahola, but I was living on the Big Island for 13 years.
In what town?
Kamoela.
Kamoela. Okay. We have a lot of focus here on what's been happening over there at Mauna Kea. Have you been focused on that at all?
Not really, since I've been home to take care of my dad.
Yes. Okay. All right. Well, so again, this Friday, the 14th, Waioli from 9 to 12.
Yes.
Okay. Well, blessings to you, and you're welcome to stay in here and be a part of more of the show if you like. Or we're going to have, I'm pretty excited, we have Dr. Ron Williams, Jr. I saw some stuff he was putting on the Internet. Like, actually, not he. He's a teacher. He's in the Hawaiian Studies program, and he had some really powerful lessons. And what's happening these days is that students and people just start filming, and they post it. And, you know, I want to give a shout-out to the University of Hawaii. They have a lot of really conscious professors and really standing up for reclaiming a lot of what wasn't maybe taught to us all correctly in the past. And so I saw something that he did where it was a comparison of the Hawaiian newspapers from the past and the advertiser, basically, in the past, and how very differently it told the story. But one is in Hawaiian and one is in English. So the history books read that 6% of the population that wrote in English. And it's not necessarily, there's not agreement between it, you know, so we maybe didn't really get the right history. And it's real interesting. And so there's so much happening right now. I invited him to call in and share some. And there's powerful lessons happening. And when I have been up with the folks from Mauna Kea, and I've had some of them in here, the charter schools, kids are growing up speaking Hawaiian, like up there on the mountain. People are, by choice, speaking Hawaiian to each other. It's a language that is coming alive again. Auntie Val, can you speak it at all?
No.
No.
Just the easy ones.
Okay. I know your generation was a generation where you were not supposed to be able to speak it, correct? Like, there was a punishment, I know, with some a lot of my, you're a little bit younger than the Kupuna that I learned from, and that they were not allowed to speak. So, but what's happening now, as all these newspapers, it was actually a very literate culture, and many, many papers, many, many things were written and published. They had almost 90% literacy in less than 20 years. It went from being an oral culture to writing and being very literate. It's very few places at that time had such full literacy. And so as people now are learning how to speak the language, all these papers are being reread. And it's like, oh, we did not get taught the real truth. So we are going to be having him call in a little bit. So you're welcome to stay and listen in, or if you would like to, Haley, I know I heard some beautiful children's voices. So, you know, as you like. And, okay, so we're going to move on a little bit. So we have this International Astronomers Union convention happening on Oahu, and I see that there has been some interaction. I saw the papers that was sent out to the attendees, and it did explain that there is some stress over the building of the 30-meter telescope. So it'll be interesting on how that happens. Also right now on the County Council of Hawaii, there's Bill 71 is under debate there. They have a glyphosate ban being suggested. That's happening today. I want to send out love to Sharon Williford on Hawaii Island, who keeps me posted on all of these things. Okay, so we have Dr. Ron Williams. Let me see if I can pull him up on the radio. Dr. Ron, are you there?
Aloha.
Aloha. Now if your radio is on, or your computer where you might be listening to me is, turn it off so we don't get feedback. Can you hear me clearly?
I can, yes. I got it off.
Okay, so I sent you a copy of the class that I saw that you did.
Right.
And I found that incredibly informative and interesting. And I was hoping that you could share some of that. Like, I just gave people a little bit of an overview that it was a comparison between English versions of what was reported in the past compared with the Native Hawaiian versions.
Right.
And so that was real, really important to me to hear those differences. And then I'm sure that you teach on many things, so I want you to basically share your mana'o. You are being listened to around the islands and across Kauai. Right now we have people from different places in the world listening also.
Sure.
And you know, I think it's very important that people understand how today's knowledge is influenced by what was interpreted from the past, and how perhaps even what happened before in the misrepresentation or the different representation of events that happened seems to me is continuing. And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, and this is Dr. Ron Williams, Jr. Okay. Dr. Ron, tell us.
Mahalo. Well, thank you for having me on, first of all. I do think, this issue of history, like everything else, has a genealogy. Yeah. We know what we know because of something that was published and written down and given to us from before. And as you mentioned earlier, you know, here in Hawaii, we're in a kind of a unique situation where so little of what was written in the time before has made it to us. And the biggest obstacle to that history getting to us has been language. And we've so normalized the idea of the use of English language as the language here in Hawaii, without understanding that for the vast majority of time in Hawaii, Olelo Hawaii, Hawaiian language was the language of the land. You know, there were people here for about 1,700 years speaking Hawaiian before English ever, you know, arrived here in the islands. But about, you know, it's changing. But as of about 15 or 20 years ago, about 99% of what was written and published in the history books came from those English language sources. So you have this really small part of the population, as you mentioned earlier. At the time of the overthrow, the Haole population in Hawaii was about 6 or 7% of the population. And they wrote down things very purposefully. You know, we all know that victors write history, yeah.
Yes.
But it's this idea of they had a purposeful mission to not only to say what they wanted to say, more purposely to erase what Hawaiians had said. And they needed to do that because of, actually because of the progressive modern, you know, Hawaiian kingdom that was in the middle of the 19th century. The incredible achievements of Native Hawaiians in that period needed to be erased because they were a small portion of the population, and they were trying to make an argument that they should run the country or run the nation. And when they're making that argument to the United States, which is a nation supposedly based on, you know, of the people, by the people, for the people, that's a hard argument to make, that 6 or 7% of the population should run the country. So they start to use the idea of that the Hawaiians aren't qualified, aren't fit to rule, aren't fit to vote, and so forth. And that can only happen if you've erased this vast history of achievement. So it's like, if, you know, sometimes in our class I'll talk about the fact that if we're going to write a history book about America, and we wanted to have the kind of best, world's best historian write that book, you know, so we hire this, it's about, say it's 1900, and we hire this gentleman to write a history of the United States. And he's an Italian professor, brilliant guy. He goes to the National Archives in Washington, D.C., and the person at the front desk tells him that they have 5 billion documents. And he says, okay, well, he doesn't speak English, he speaks Italian. And so he says, give me everything you've got written in Italian. And so she goes back into those 5 billion documents, and she pulls out the 500 that are written by Italian Americans. And he reads those 500 documents, and he writes a history of the United States. And that gets turned into a movie, that gets turned into a newspaper, that gets turned into an after-school special. It becomes the history of the United States. And that's exactly what's happened here in Hawaii, is that small portion of the population wrote the history that we're all reading. You know, there's, you mentioned a talk that you might have seen. It was actually a talk at Ola'a Church in Kurdistan. I got out there, they invited me out to talk to the community in Kurdistan. And one of the things we talked about was the specifics of those, of how this happened. You know, the provisional government, after they had overthrown the queen, had certain people that were producing history. One of them was William DeWitt Alexander, the missionary son, one of the most prolific people, writers on Hawaiian history. And he produced a pamphlet about the overthrow of the queen. And it was kind of, it was all from the provisional government side. There were no royalist sources at all. And it was pretty biased, one-sided account of the overthrow. When the supposed annexation happens in 1898, they have him turn that pamphlet into a book. And that book became a book called A Brief History of the Hawaiian People. This book, A Brief History of the Hawaiian People, talks about rampant infanticide by Hawaiians, that two-thirds of Hawaiian children were murdered by their parents because they were too lazy to raise them. You know, these really horrific charges and baseless charges about Native Hawaiians at the time. That became the school textbook for all the schools in Hawaii for 40 years. So that's the power of creating these narratives. You know, he was the president of the Board of Education. So when we talk about, you know, what folks knew 20 years ago or 30 years ago or so forth, it's because, you know, what they learned coming out of those schools is this narrative from the provisional government, you know. And that's all changing over the last maybe 20 or 30 years because of some incredibly, you know, wonderful young researchers and professors and so forth. Maikumu Noinoi Silva was one of the first to, not one of the first, but one of the ones that made the largest impact by rediscovering the anti-annexation petitions. And she's kind of sponsored and gotten lots of students under her wing. Noelani Arista, Brian Kuwata, you know, these folks are researching Hawaiian language newspapers and bringing those voices of the kupuna out to the masses, and it's completely changing the history that we know.
And I think that when people, different people are able to read it, like we're seeing all these young people that are rising up, it's really making a big difference. Ron, are you able to look at your phone? It's got kind of a buzz.
Oh, okay.
Are you clearly speaking into the transmitter?
I think so, yeah. I might have the landline. Yeah.
Okay, so we'll just be aware of that. So keep telling us.
Yeah, so, you know, it really is, you know, affecting. And you know, as I earned my PhD in 2013 in Hawaiian history. And since then, I've been working on my dissertation and turning it into a book and so forth, and going out to the community and sharing these stories. And they're incredible stories. And the thing about not only Hawaii but everywhere is these stories all have a genealogy. You know, there's real folks in these stories that are tied to families in the community today. And we can bring those histories back to the people and tell them about the incredible achievements of their kupuna. It really is affecting. And that's the reward. That's what starts to change things for us. I was out on Molokai about a month ago, working on a small grant, and was talking to the students at Molokai Elementary School and Molokai Junior High and the high schools and also the immersion class. And to try to explain to these children how much patriotism, how much love of Lahui, how much love of the monarchy that their kupuna had, and the things that they had done and achieved, you know, really inspires them to start searching their own histories. And that's one of the benefits that we see out of this.
And when you look at the main issues that are being addressed, as I'm learning more and more just as an observer, I'm finding there's a pretty big gap between what the community that is really starting to search out the Hawaiian voice that was missed and what is the broad narrative. Do you see it, the existing governance starting to be paying attention to what happened? Do you see shifts that are positive that has come out of the exposure to the information that wasn't brought correctly?
You know, I do, and that's a great question, and it's also a very important question, because there's lots of pamala here. There's lots of sad stories here. You know, I teach several classes in Hawaiian Studies at the Center for Hawaiian Studies, and they can tend to be overwhelming and sad because of this history. But what I'm starting to see is the fact that when we bring forward these stories of achievement, it inspires students. But also, as you mentioned, yes, I'm seeing institutional changes. I'm on the board of the Hawaiian Historical Society in Honolulu, and that board over the last maybe 6 or 7 or 8 years has really shifted to include several Hawaiian language speakers, to include folks that are doing this work in the archives, and which affects the publications that are coming out of the society, which affects, you know, a lot of these different things. So I see them changing. I see the Bishop Museum has made a significant shift in the last 10 or 15 years, where in Maimanao, in my opinion, they, in the past, have avoided some of these historical issues, are embracing them now and talking about them. There's a project I'm working on right now for the Hawaiian Judiciary Center, which produces the history of the Hawaiian judiciary in Hawaii. They have a museum where the Kamehameha statue is across from the palace. They're kind of shifting their narrative to include these native voices. And it's not, the thing I always try to explain to people is it's not necessarily a political issue. It's also a historical issue. You know, certain things happened. We've got to address them and talk about them, clearly. The argument isn't that all the English language sources lie and the Hawaiian language sources tell the truth. The argument is that as a historian, as somebody, as a consumer of history, don't you want to get 10 witnesses' opinion and listen to all 10 of them before you make up your own mind?
Well, I know that I saw online this history of the later years of the Hawaiian monarchy and the revolution of 1893, and that was written by William Alexander.
Right, William Alexander, right.
Yeah, and it's pretty negative bias. It's kind of amazing that a document could be written like that in such a derogatory way and then be considered the Hawaiian history book, right, in the Department of Education?
Right, and you have to imagine, you have to kind of put yourself in the frame of mind of imagining the normalization of that. Of course, when it was written and published, there were lots of people who knew better, who knew that their computer weren't like this, who knew that this didn't happen, and so forth. But over the course of 10, 20, 30, 40 years, people start to internalize this. And so that's why in the 1940s and 50s and 60s, you have these situations where, Native Hawaiians have kind of internalized this narrative and because they don't know the past history.
Right.
And so it changes,
Ron, can I have you try and redial in, because
sure.
the sound quality is, I want to make it be stronger.
Sure, I can do that. I could Skype into you either way. Or FaceTime, I have.
Oh, do you have FaceTime?
Yeah. Do you want to try that?
Yes.
Okay, so you want to put your phone number in there?
Okay, well, actually, Marshall, I'm going to have you talk story a little bit while I work with Ron here.
Okay. Well, you know what? One thing that's really kind of exciting to me, actually, right now, this is on a change of subject completely, is the Republican presidential debate. The first one is coming up on Thursday.
Oh, yeah. Are you following that, Ron? And I realize I don't have you on the separate phone. I hate doing this on air. Ron, can you call me on
652-4363.
652-4363. Will do. Thank you. Okay. So, anyway, Fox News has finally announced which 10 candidates will make the cutoff for the main debate. And so there's going to be a main debate at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So that's 3 p.m. in the afternoon for us. Should go for about 2 hours. And there'll be a minor debate among those who didn't make the cutoff at 5 p.m. Eastern. So it's going to be 11 in the morning for us. And, yeah, they're ranking it. You know, they made the cutoff based on the national polling averages. And so we've got Donald Trump way at the top, and they're even going to sit him right in the center of the stage. And I just think it's going to be fascinating. It's a real experiment in politics and presidential elections. We've never seen something like this in our country before. So let's see. Let me tell you who the candidates that have made the cutoff are going to be. It's Donald Trump, Jeb Bush, Scott Walker, Mike Huckabee, Ben Carson, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Rand Paul, Chris Christie, and John Kasich. So these are the 10 Republicans who essentially are going to continue to vie for the Republican nomination for president. The rest of them not making this cutoff really are just going to kind of start to fade in the background, is seems to be the consensus. If you don't see them on the stage for the first big debate, you know, they're just kind of going to be considered also rans. So that leaves out Rick Santorum, Bobby Jindal, Carly Fiorina, Lindsey Graham, George Pataki, Jim Gilmore, and Rick Perry. So those are the people that we won't have the pleasure of seeing up on that stage. I'm going to try to watch both of them as Felicia continues with some technical challenges on getting Ron back on the phone. Yeah, I think it should be very interesting. You know, as far as Donald Trump is concerned, I think we're either going to see him pull a rabbit out of the hat and somehow show himself to be a credible candidate, or pretty much show his, inadequacies in some ways. You know, can he answer a serious question about foreign policy? Can he do anything other than sort of a reality show grandstanding? Be very interesting to see. And so let's see, Felicia, what else do you is on your mind besides getting him back on the phone? I can go on about international politics for a while. Let's see. Maybe we could have somebody else call in here. There we go. Say the word and the big red light goes on. Hang on. And we should have a caller. Felicia, do you want to put that caller on the line? Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, everyone. So I guess changing the subject once again, just kind of want to talk about food security and how we can make ourselves more secure here on this island with a great new or great coming program that's going to be starting in September this year at Kauai Community College.
Great.
Yeah, so it's called Go Farm Hawaii, and the mission of the Go Farm program is to enhance Hawaii's food security by food security and economy by increasing the number of local agricultural producers. by offering those with an interest in ag, a combination of knowledge, experience, and support designed in assisting them in becoming viable producers. So if anyone is interested in the program, we're going to be having a recruitment seminar on Tuesday, August 18th, over at the Coy Community College, where if you're interested in farming or looking for a career or opportunity or a way to earn supplemental income for farming, you can hear from Kauai farmers talk story about their startup experiences and challenges, and also hear from other government agencies that help support farmers on the island. And then we're going to be starting our actual agricultural classes for the Go Farm program, which we're going to start with several farm tours around the island, with working with various farmers on different sides of the island to just get people exposed and giving them hands-on experiences about what it's like to be working on sustainable farms. And then in October, we're going to start with our hands-on comprehensive education in all aspects and business on the science of sustainable farming on Kauai. So that's going to be a 2 days a week kind of thing. On Thursday evenings, we're going to have different experts in the field of agriculture come in and talk about different topics, whether it's businesses, business sides of agriculture, marketing, or the science-based stuff, whether it's horticultural techniques, pest management, et cetera, et cetera. And then on Saturdays in the mornings, we're going to have all-day hands-on field experiences where people get their own plot of land and they get to apply what they've been learning in the classroom into the field, and that will run through February 16th. So this is a really great opportunity for those who, you know, are really interested in becoming production farmers and want to learn and experience the technical and business aspects of becoming a successful farmer in Hawaii. And, you know, I know we're not really allowed to tell prices or anything like that, but I would say that
good price.
You know, it's very, very highly subsidized thanks to a lot of generous sponsors, and it's a great price. And if anyone is interested, they can call the Kauai Community College OSET office at 245-8318, or they can email oset@hawaii.edu. And once again, we'll be having a recruitment seminar coming up Tuesday, August 18th from 6 to 8 p.m.
Okay, and we can have you maybe even stop in and give a little bit of stuff. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Aloha. Okay, so Ron, do I have you back on?
You do.
All right, that's a little better. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you so much.
No, sorry about the problems.
So what class? What's the name of the class that you are the professor of?
Well, I teach several classes. I teach the Hawaiian Studies 107 course, which is kind of the general. It goes over language, migrations, religion, history, politics, everything for kind of incoming students. I teach the honors section of that class also. And I've taught Hawaiian Kingdom history. I've taught I had the privilege of teaching. My kumu and my mentor was Haunani K. Trask. Came over in 2000. Go ahead. I came over in 2005 from Maui to kind of study under her, and she retired 2 years ago, and I taught her sovereignty class for one semester. So I had the privilege of doing that, but mostly kind of general ed courses.
Are you over here on Kauai at all? We're still not having a very good connection, so I don't know how long we'll be able to do this. Do you ever come over here?
You know, I do. I was over recently. I write for Honoho Magazine, also the magazine of the Hawaiian Airlines. We did a feature story on Hawaiian language recently, the revitalization, and I had the privilege of going to church with the Ni'ihau folks on Kauai and my good friend Keau Naismith, who's over from Kauai. So I have been over. Yeah.
Oh, good. Because there's a lot of energy and movement over here. Are you aware of the Unity March that's happening on Sunday?
Yeah, we're one of the co-sponsors at Tumaku Kokalani. Yeah.
So the UH is one of the co-sponsors of that?
Actually, the Center for Hawaiian Studies itself is, yeah.
Okay, so tell us about that just a little bit, because we do have, it's interesting, a lot of the people who are in the Unity March are concerned with many of the positions that the University of Hawaii takes. So I like that they allow you that latitude to be part of what is maybe giving some pushback.
Right. Well, I would credit Haunani K, my kumu, for that, you know, and many others. Lili Kalakame'i Lahiva and John Osorio and those folks have fought long and hard at the university to kind of remind them, you know, the University of Hawaii's mission statement, one of the first lines of the mission statement says they're a Hawaiian place of learning. And we, you know, the center has kind of challenged them on that for quite a while, saying, you know, that you, that they have kind of forgotten that. And so Haunani K was very adept at calling them out on that and having her students call them out on that. And we can, you know, Dr. Kamei Lahiva and Dr. Sorio and others, Carlos Andrade and others have kept doing that. So you know, we kind of exist to challenge the university, even though we're part of the university.
Huh. And I do see that Jonathan Osorio put out a really interesting letter on July 1st called A Hawaiian National on Independence. Oh, it was actually a little bit time ago, but A Hawaiian National on Independence Day. Mm. And really describing that word ea, meaning spiritual sovereignty.
Yeah.
And I see that that is the word for a lot of this movement.
Yeah.
And how old are you? Sorry to just ask you that.
No, that's okay. I'm 49. I went back to school at 35.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, I'm 49.
So you're kind of in the mid-range there, because it seems like there's a lot of young people, a lot of middle ground. I have a friend in the studio here, Val. Val, have you, you're Hawaiian, yeah? Like, you look actually more Hawaiian than most.
Yes, I am.
And you've been living on Hawaii Island. And are you I know your father has just passed away, but do you have any questions or thoughts for our professor here?
Not at this moment.
Okay, putting her on the spot. But I'm like, I got her in here kind of helping with this dialogue here. And I think that there are big paradigms that need to shift.
Yeah.
When we learn that much of what we have been taught isn't true. I want to ask you a question.
Sure.
This is just sort of a selfish one on maybe where I have not been taught correctly. Like, when I read history, it describes Kalakaua as having an alcohol problem.
Right.
And that was like the hallmark of his reign. And is that inaccurate?
Right. Well, you know, that's the thing that I've learned over the last 10 or 12 years in the archive, in the Hawaiian language archive, is that most of these stories have other sides to them. You know, and there's people who have done this work, you know, long before I have, and that story of Kalakaua, and Iolani Palace and all of these things, has been one-sided for quite a while. You know, when I took Hawaiian studies, in Maui, at Maui Community College in 2003 or 2002, the textbook that I learned Hawaiian history out of was Gavin Dawes's The Shoal of Time, which is,
I've read that.
You know, yeah, which is very, very problematic. I mean, very problematic. It doesn't access a single Hawaiian language source, and so forth. And so, you know, in that 10-year span, you know, things have shifted and changed. And so, again, you know, going back to those Hawaiian language archives, if you read the Hawaiian language newspapers around Kalakaua, the idea of Iolani Palace, you know, coming out of all the English language papers, and again, we have to remember that, what are those English language papers? I mean, the English language papers in the 1880s were the foreign language press of Hawaii. You know, they were specifically for the foreign audience in Hawaii. The papers of the people, of the people that lived here and the citizens and the subjects and so forth in general, were those Hawaiian language sources. And where the English language paper is calling Kalakaua to task on building Iolani Palace, saying that he's wasting money, saying that he's spent so much money on this egotistical palace of his, the Hawaiian language press is proud of the fact that he has built a palace that shows the world that Native Hawaiians have their own nation and are running their own nation. It's an architectural testimony to nationhood, you know, and they're very proud of that. You know, many people have already heard some of the facts of the fact that Ilani Palace had electricity long before the White House and Buckingham Palace. You know, when I was over on Molokai talking to the students, you know, I reminded them that the 1852 Constitution for the Kingdom of Hawaii offered universal suffrage. And when we think about that, 1852, if you were an African-American, if you were Chinese, if you were Japanese, any race, you could become a citizen of the Kingdom of Hawaii, own property, and vote. And this is a decade before the Civil War in the United States. So whereas in the United States you still have slavery going on, in the Kingdom you had universal suffrage. And that's a progressive, modern nation run by native Hawaiian monarchs. And that's the type of history that we've been, that's been pushed aside and lost.
Yes. I mean, it's kind of shameful. As I read different pieces, I keep learning more and more. I go, wow, you know, I actually didn't have it right. And it's hard to, you know, to know, all right, well, where is right? You know, like there are all these different perspectives. And I think certainly that we see that in the present tense.
Mm-hmm. You know, what I'm curious about is the legal system. What was the Hawaiian legal system like in the later years of the monarchy?
Well, you know, it's kind of a big question, but what I can tell you is that you know, part of the changing of this narrative, part of the shifting of focus from us listening to people writing about Hawaiians to listening to what Hawaiians are saying about themselves and explaining about themselves, is that we're changing the narrative of not necessarily only the events, but how those events are seen. You know, for a long time, the narrative of the 1840 Constitution, the idea of moving Hawaii to a Western style of government, was described as an imposition of Hauli advisors on the king. And what that does is portray a native Hawaiian monarch as somebody who could be bullied and kind of tricked into something and so forth. What we've discovered, and what, you know, folks like Donovan Preza, Willie Kauai, and others, native Hawaiian PhDs of recent note, have shown that Kawakeoli, Kamehameha III, did something almost unheard of in world history, and that is, you know, he was an absolute monarch. He was basically divine. What he said went. And in 1840, he chose voluntarily, without an uprising, he chose to give up two-thirds of his power and create a constitutional monarchy for Hawaii, because that would lead into recognition by other nations of the world as Hawaii being a sovereign and independent nation, which happened in 1843. In 1843, England and France signed the Anglo-French Proclamation, which gave Hawaiian, which said Hawaii is an independent and sovereign nation. It was the first non-European nation in the world to achieve that. And what that did was protect Hawaii for 50 years. There's no doubt that in the 1840s and 50s and 60s, Hawaii would have been gobbled up by Spain or France or even the United States later or so forth, without that protection. And so instead of looking at it as that some of his Hauli advisors tricked him into moving to a Western-style democracy, we now understand it as a brilliant decision by him to move to a type of government that would be recognized and would afford his people protection. And it worked for over 50 years, 50 years. The 1893 overthrow happened for different reasons. But it was a brilliant move, and it was an incredibly progressive move. So it's changing our understanding of those types of things. And, you know, you mentioned earlier you know, I just wanted to mention, you know, there's stories at that have been lost, that institutionally we need to grasp onto for our students. There was a gentleman named John Henry Wise. It's one of my favorite subjects and stories. He was from Kohala, a kid from Kohala. He went to Hilo boarding school, was at the first class of Kamehameha. He was chosen to be in the first class at Kamehameha. And in 1890, the mission sent him to Oberlin College to get further missionary training. And so he is a 19-year-old. He boards a ship and goes to San Francisco, travels across this foreign country to Oberlin, Ohio, and he's at Oberlin College. While he's at Oberlin College, he was an athlete, so he helped start the football team there. In 1891, they're a decent team. They do okay. But in 1892, a new coach comes on board, a brilliant football mind, and he coaches the team, and they basically become the national champions. There was no national championship at the time, but they beat Ohio State twice, they beat Michigan twice, and they're written about in papers across the country as the Oberlin, you know, greatest team, football team in the country. This kid from Kohala led that team, John Henry Wise. His coach at that time was John Heisman.
From like Heisman Trophy guys?
Exactly. So the idea that you have a 19-year-old kid from Kohala who was the first Native Hawaiian to play college football in America, and he played for John Heisman, and not a person at the university knows that story. That's what's questionable. Why aren't we celebrating him? He came back here to Hawaii. He became a senator. He was one of the gentlemen who helped write the Hawaiian Homelands Bill in 1920. He was one of the people that got the University of Hawaii built. He was the second professor of Hawaiian language at the University of Hawaii, here at Manoa.
This is the football player.
Right. In 1926, he's hired as the second Hawaiian language professor at the university. When he passes in 1937, the UH Regents named the football field after him. So the old football field, before we had Aloha Stadium, you know, on campus here was called Wise Field. And yet again, the students here don't know who that is. And that's the troubling part of these histories.
Well, thank you for sharing that. You're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia with Kauai's Soapbox. On the phone with us is Professor John Williams, Jr. from Hawaiian Studies. Marshall, did we have a caller with a question?
We did. What is there a Hawaiian history book that you would recommend?
Yeah, I want to know that, too.
Ooh, that's a tough question. That's a difficult question because there's been lots and lots of really wonderful work written in the last 5 or 10 years. But, you know, it coming together as a general history book, that hasn't happened yet, in my opinion. Dr. Noinoi Silva's book, Aloha Betrayed, is one of the first that I would recommend. It's a very specific topic. It's about resistance to annexation. But she really succinctly and clearly debunks the myth that Hawaiians didn't fight for their nation. Dr. Silva was one of the people that had rediscovered the anti-annexation petitions in Washington, D.C. And so her book, Aloha Betrayed, is a wonderful start. Lately, there's been other books written by Kamana Beamer's book. Kamana Beamer is a professor, was recently a professor at Hawaiian Studies. He wrote his book this year, won the Po'okela Awards book for being the top book in Hawaiian history.
Is he relatively young and on the Commission for Water Resource Management?
He is. And he just got a job as...
Stay near the mic.
I'm sorry. He just got a job as the head of the Kohala Center on the Big Island. But his book is called No Mako Kamana, Liberating the Nation. And I would definitely recommend his book. Because his book is, I think, in my opinion, his book is the first one to really incorporate all of these things we've been talking about into kind of a history.
Well, that's interesting to know that. I mean, I'm glad that he is on the council for water resource management. We are definitely, what we'll be talking about a little bit later in this show, is these water diversions. And water seems like a very big issue, and it seemed like actually it had a lot to do with what exhausted the vitality on Kauai of the Kanaka Mo'oli.
Right.
So, Marshall, do you have another question from a caller? Do you have any final thoughts for us?
Well, you know, I just one thing I would mention is, you know, you earlier had brought up the idea of, are there any big shifts, you know, in by doing this? And there's some tremendous shifts. You know, it's not only a one-sided shift. You know, we're really shifting our understanding of all of the institutions in Hawaii, including the church. You know, I myself am not Christian, but my dissertation was on the Native Hawaiian Christian churches in Hawaii. And the remarkable thing that I found was that every single history of the mission here in Hawaii was written from the annual reports of what has been called the Hawaiian Evangelical Association, which was the group of Native churches here in Hawaii. Well, it turns out in 1863, when that group formed, their constitution mandates that the language of the official association is Olelo Hawaii. And so they were producing Hawaiian language reports every year and English reports. The English reports were to send back to Boston. When I started to compare the two, I noticed that there's significant differences in the two papers, not only in content, but also in translation, in understanding. And so how you can write a history of the Christian mission in Hawaii without accessing those primary source reports and only relying on the translations, that's problematic. And so we're starting to even find a whole new history of the Christian church in Hawaii.
Hmm.
So it really is affecting everything.
Well, we're always hoping that we will move forward in a stronger and better way together.
Is
what I'm looking for. And I appreciate it. I just want to thank you. And I want to thank whatever student is in your room or whoever films your classes.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
How can people find your classwork that's on YouTube?
Well, I've done a few talks out at places, Waimanalo and other places that are on YouTube, so if you search my name. But in general, there's a site called academia.edu. And if you search my name, if you search Ron Williams Jr., it should come up in a Google search. It'll be academia.edu, and everything that I publish or write is up there. So if anybody's interested, they're welcome to access that site.
Okay. And then what you also are on is Donna Banana.
Oh,
so,
okay.
Donna Banana on YouTube.
Okay.
So, okay, well, thank you so much for calling in. And so you're going to be at the march on Sunday?
I'll be there.
And what's the goal? What's the objective? And, hey, where's the starting point at 9 o'clock?
I believe it's down at the town end of Kalakaua, I believe. And I'm not a spokesman for the march, so I don't really want to say what the goal is. I know that, as you said, what I've heard strongly is the fact that it's a unity march. It's to say that we all have concerns, and let's start to have the people's voices be heard.
Yes, and to be bringing people together. It seems like when there is a lot of voices that are speaking out against it, a lot of times race comes in there to try and get people to be adverse to one another. Because it is a multitude of races that are all going, we are not taking care of the land. We are not respecting our host culture. We're not, not walking in pono enough, and it's a wide variety of people. Certainly Kanaka Maoli, but not just that. And so my understanding is walking in unity, and so people are wearing red shirts, is that correct, and going down Kalakaua.
Yes. And I I'll mention before I leave one thing about, you mentioned the idea of race. Willie Kauai is a Native Hawaiian PhD, just got his PhD in political science. His entire PhD is on the idea that the kingdom, the citizenship in the kingdom was based upon loyalty to the nation, not race. And so he really takes to task that idea of a division of race and so forth, and says that's an invented thing that the nation has taken on recently, but it didn't exist in the kingdom. And so he's another one of those great young scholars that's doing great work.
And do you have an opinion on the Department of Interior's list and that effort?
I do have my own personal opinions. I'd rather not share them right now. But it's just, I have my history that I do, and I have my stuff that I do in the community and so forth. But I'll be out there.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for joining us on KKCR.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Aloha.
Aloha.
So we had a caller who just wanted to give kudos to the family of Uncle Calvin for coming in and speaking about him.
Yeah. There is.
Mahalo.
Yes. Okay, so we're going to hear from our underwriters. Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with The Copper Man, 808 Equipment Rental, and Anahola Cafe.
KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K224CQ, Anahola, K284AL, Haleiwa.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of KKCR, its board of directors, staff, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConti.com. That's HarryConti.com or 639-3456.
808 Equipment Rentals, providing tractor, bobcat, and BCS tiller services island-wide, including pasture mowing, garden bed raising, vegetation removal, terracing, gravel spreading, and more. 808 Equipment Rentals in Molawa'a. 823-1000.
Anahola Cafe, located at mile marker 12.5 on Cujillo Highway, is proud to support KKCR. The Anahola Cafe is a community enterprise of the Anahola Hawaiian Homestead Association and serves Saimin and local cuisine daily from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday. 631-4134.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. So, Marshall, did someone call in with a lane closure? Is that what you heard?
Well, they didn't call in. I actually was there today. It's just Princeville side of the Hanalei Bridge. There's some kind of construction, and they're closing one lane at a time. So I was lucky enough to get right through coming this way. But as I did, I saw that the traffic going into Hanalei was backed up just about to the police station.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, well, lots of other things going on at the Kauai County Council tomorrow. Two of the issues that are going to be pretty hot is, one is these term limits. Ross Kagawa, I believe, is the one who put in the ordinance, a bill for an ordinance to remove the term limits being limited to 8 years for Kauai County Council. So people might be in there to discuss it if they think that it shouldn't be. How that did get limited, that was by a vote right on the, I'm losing my word, like right on the election ballot. People were able to vote. It was a ballot initiative that people voted on and said 2/3 no, we want to limit the length of time for council members, but that is being revisited, and barking dogs issue is up again tomorrow.
We just had a caller would like you to repeat the names of the two books that were recommended, the Hawaiian history books. Do you have that jotted down?
Well, I had jotted down Aloha Betrayed, and that was by Dr. Silva, mm-hmm. and I didn't get the second one quite jotted down, so okay. No, I didn't. But Aloha Betrayed, and I think that is to a pretty specific issue. But what I felt I heard him being say is that, you know, those books are kind of in the process of being experienced right now. And, you know, there's an incredible amount of things on the blog sites that are a lot by the professors at the university.
You know what I was thinking when he was talking about, what was the book on Hawaiian history, the
Shoals of Time.
Shoals of Time, right. Then, you know, I read that, and then I read James Michener's Hawaii, mm-hmm. and that was based very, very closely on Shoals of Time. So you've got not just that nonfiction book sort of resonating its ideas, but then it is amplified by Michener's very popular novel.
Yes, and so when we've used the word on this show before, a meme, when we start a meme or a way of viewing an issue, sometimes it gets really hard to know, well, where is that a bias? It becomes almost a fact, but in fact, it isn't a fact. So that's a very big challenge. It's, you know, crosses over so many different areas. But caller, I am sorry I didn't get the name of the second book down. The Kilauea Neighborhood Association meeting is also tonight at 7 o'clock. We have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hey, great job, guys. That bill about the councilman having endless extra income to become councilman for the rest of their lives, the guy that drew up that bill or whoever, is his limit up by any chance?
Person who put the bill forward? No, it isn't. Ross Kagawa's time is not up.
Okay, because I was thinking that sounds like something a politician would do, is kind of like self-serving and get himself on there. And another, since I'm complaining, they're shutting the water down again up at Waipo'o. I had a feeling they would when it got to the dry season. It's just a little trickle right now up at Koke'e Waimea. And I think they're diverting the water again to go ahead and water that guy's GMO.
Which guy?
Oh, I don't. Okay, whoever owns like millions of acres on land.
Okay, yeah. So, and I know I have seen very clearly the pictures that are being put up there and right near Blue Hole on the way up there in Wailua, the rocks that have been put again to cross the river and push it into over to the power plant is really where it's going. It's going over the KIUC's power plant. Now, we all get power from that, including this radio station that's going on the air right now. But they leave the stream bed completely dry as it's going past it. And so there's been quite a bit of concern over that. And I see that people have gone up and moved the rocks so that the river can flow again. But this seems to be a big push and pull, and I believe that you're not supposed to be able to completely 100% dry up the stream flow. Do you know?
No, I don't, but I wasn't even aware of the Loop Road situation. The island really needs that water. The only reason it's not retaining like it used to is because of all the man-made structures, the roads, the buildings, stuff like that. But to kind of take the water away from as little as getting there is not good. And what I was speaking about before is Waipo'o up at Waimea Canyon, the big, beautiful 800-foot waterfall. You know how they divert, they shut it down, and they're diverting the water down to the west side garden or the west side GMO fields again. So that Waimea Canyon really needs that water. The wildlife needs that water, and we need that water. It's just something that really bothers. I thought I'd say something since not everybody gets up there all the time.
I appreciate the call in on that. I have gotten, no pun intended, a steady stream of distress about the water redirects, you know, just in the past week or two. I think if we do get this tropical storm, that's going to at least help it a little bit for the moment. But when you dry these streams completely up that aren't normally that way, it's guaranteed got to kill the fish. Yeah?
Waipo'o means the head of the river. That's the head of the Waimea River right there. So it starts up in Alakai, but it runs down through there. The fish need it. The birds need it. The wildlife, you know. It's try to keep everybody happy. The humans are doing good. We're alive and well.
Yes. Okay, well, thank you for calling that in.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Great show.
Thank you so much. And I did have an Akamai listener who texted me in, and that he let me know that No Maka Kamana by Kamana Beamer is what he believed he heard as the second book that was the history book that was recommended. And that resonates with me because I was saying, Kamana Beamer, he's the one on the Water Commission.
You know, he actually just called back to let us know that.
Oh.
That is, the second word is M-A-K-A-U.
Oh, Macau.
Right, and that's by Kamehameha Schools Publishing, or is published by Kamehameha Schools Publishing.
Oh, okay, Kamehameha Schools Publishing. Hey, and you know one thing that he didn't mention when he was on the radio, but the bishop, the pastor that was a bishop, he wrote in these papers, and his pen name was Kamehameha. So when he was writing in the Western paper in the press, 100 or so years ago, he was writing under the pen name of Kamehameha. So the pen name of Kamehameha was degrading the efforts of the Kanaka Maoli, their own government running, so it was pretty difficult on that. I also had another Akamai listener tell me Hawaii water law mandates no more than half of stream flow can legally be diverted. KIUC diversions are not legal. So that is a listener putting that in. I can't 100% confirm that that is illegal, what is happening, because they probably do have some sort of permit. It's hard to imagine that they could just go up and blatantly move the water like that. But the pictures show 100% stream diversion.
Hmm.
Was if we have any Akamai listeners out there who fish upstream, who are stream fishermen, sometimes we have some very sharp people. They might be able to tell us, you know, what has been the pattern in the pathway on that one.
What's your greatest concern when it comes to water on the island altogether and stream diversion in particular?
Well, I mean, what did historically happen when that water was shifted away is that was one of the things that pushed the people into poverty. When you go up in the archaeological areas back there in Wailua, and it's not really that long ago, they had water running all through their villages that were right there. They had little areas that came through. It kept people healthy and clean and with food in abundance. And so it made us be dependent. It made us be dependent. And, or I should say us, I'm Hanaiing myself into the scene here. But it made the people here dependent on imported goods. And we start to move away from individual sovereignty and the ability for Kauai to stay and, you know, self-reliant and resilient. Aloha, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Alicia. This is Adam calling. I wanted to share my manawa about the Blue Hole Diversion.
Okay, perfect.
And Hawaii water law. We Hawaii has a phenomenal water law. That goes, parts of it go back to even pre-Kingdom law to Aupua law. But unfortunately, part of that, there is no part of it that dictates how much water you can or can't take from the stream. That case has to be pleaded to the Water Commission.
Okay, so that was incorrect, what somebody had just sent in to me.
That's correct. It is kind of common law and common understanding that at least during traditional aqua management practices were to take no more than 50% of the water, and that just kind of seems logical. And, in fact, that's kind of what the Water Commission, or I should step back, that's what the Supreme Court has been ordering the Water Commission to dictate in these contested case hearings, basically.
Okay, thank you very much, because that's really important to me that I get it clarified and I'm not giving misinformation. So I appreciate that. I know that you have worked on water resource law and Kapua Sprout, if she's out there listening.
Yeah, and so unfortunately it sets up the situation where people like KIUC or other diverters can go take whatever they want, and they can continue to do so until someone complains, and it goes through this lengthy legal process to set it to something balanced.
Well, not anybody could do it, right? Like, I couldn't go do it without a consequence. Is that correct?
Yeah, so actually the Blue Hole one is an interesting one. So that was managed by Liwili Plantation as part of that whole east side irrigation system. When Liwili Plantation shut down, there was a mad scramble to keep those diversions open and flowing, because if the water had stopped even for a few days, an entity like you would have had to go to the Water Commission and ask for that water and demonstrate how much you needed and that it would have no impact on stream life. But if they stepped in and took the baton directly from Liwili Plantation, they didn't need to do that.
Mm.
Well, KIUC has been operating on a kind of a month-to-month water lease or water use permit that was grandfathered in from Liwili Plantation. They are requesting a 65-year lease to continue that diversion for that length of time. That's what the plantation had. And that went through a contested case hearing by OHA.
And I did tag the different people on the board for KIUC with the presentation of the show today, knowing that I would mention that. So if they're listening, please call in at 826-7771. I also will invite them in if they would like to come in to talk about water usage. My understanding is that water gets redirected right there because it optimizes the Kapaia power plant, which is the newer power plant that provides probably the most consistent power. Is that consistent with your understanding, Adam?
Well, it was, yes, it runs through actually two of the two hydro plants over there, and then it's delivered into the grow farm irrigation system, and then it's sliced up like a, you know, like a hog to market after that.
Well, there's a lot of water that runs through the Kapaia plant, too.
That's correct. That's it. Yes.
Is that the same water?
Well, there's two hydroelectric plants up top, and it goes into the grow farm irrigation system, and it's delivered to Kapaia Reservoir. And then there's another power plant that water is used as cooling water for the Capaya power plant and a whole bunch of other uses.
So I will say that, you know, many of us do benefit from it. I had an interesting experience yesterday, you know, and it towards the end of the road at KA Beach, and going out there, and it was a really good metaphor for me to see how, without any one entity being bad or good, I don't see who is evil in these challenges that we experience out there. I feel like it's the same thing going on with the water. I mean, we're all using the power, but it's not right what's happening with the water. Maybe when you're off the phone, I'll explain about the what I'm seeing out there in Hyena, because we're going to really need this North Shore management plan, and nobody's going to really be happy with it, but it's not easy to make it right. Are you familiar with what's going on out there?
No, I'm not, but just in general, just because we all benefit from it doesn't make it right. You know, prior to 1860, the entire southern state complex in the United States benefited from that peculiar institution of slavery, but that doesn't make it right. There was a whole bunch of another segment of the society that didn't benefit from it. So the state law requires a balanced use of the water, and not a sole use to a sole source.
Yes. I mean, you know, I think at a quick look, it's really powerful seeing the backhoes over there moving, or bobcats moving the rock right over the river and just taking all the water. I've been up there. I've seen where that happens. The difference between going upstream from that point, there's a nice, thick, almost carpet of air ferns or something on the ground above the diversion, and then down below it's dirt and rock. I mean, to have that much change happen in such a small area is very, very profound.
Well, even in Western, in Western societies, I mean, one of the first things we're taught in school and preschool and kindergarten is the concept of sharing. And taking all of anything isn't really supported in any society. I find any kind of argument that justifies the taking of anything for their single purpose kind of difficult to justify.
Well, thank you so much for calling in and sharing that.
Thank you very much.
Aloha. Aloha, thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hey, right on, Felicia. You kind of brought up your scenario or your experience of the road in Hyena.
Okay, I just alluded to it, and I'll share it in a minute. Tell me what you're thinking.
Well, it's not getting any better, and the other day we were up at Foodland, and we saw all these shovel trucks parked in the back lot, and we're like, what's going on with that? And my wife told me, it wasn't economically feasible for them to keep running the shuttles, so they're going to keep all these shuttles back here.
The North Shore shuttle. I know. That was an effort that was made.
I thought it was really good. It worked good for the community down there that maybe doesn't have a car and stuff. For a buck, you can get out of the, you know. And,
I know it's tough. I think that was designed to be moving visitors, and it was mostly moving residents.
Yeah, locals. Right.
And it wasn't lightening up the effort at the end of the road. And so, but thank you for calling in. I will go ahead or you can listen in. I'll share what I saw.
Well, let's take it a step further, though.
Okay.
Let's say that if the tourist wants to drive down there in their Mustang right off the lot airport rental car, okay, they should have to pay a toll for driving down there. And then you're going to see more people using the shuttles and stuff like that.
Well, there are big issues that they're trying to figure out for sure. Like, how do they do it? And there's this thing called the North Shore Management Plan, and I need to do a show on that. It's very key on figuring out what happened. I will share what I observed. I don't know if you want to stay on the line for that, though.
No, I'm just saying my picture, and what I've observed is that it's not getting any better. I mean, it's stemmed not only in Hyena, but literally up into Honolulu now, where you can't get across the bridge at certain times of the day without a, you know, half hour wait, you know. So,
yeah, it can, it can be very, very big. It can back up all the way.
Someone's got to do something. Someone's got to do something. And,
so thank you.
I just want to close out with saying that I so appreciate the Safri family coming in tonight. We thought Uncle Calvin's, kudos was going to be this Saturday, but they're telling us that it's on Friday the 19th or something? 14th.
Friday, August 14th at Waiole Hui Church.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Aloha.
Aloha. All right. Well, I'll just quickly say what I watched out there. And you are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Kauai Soapbox. I had a friend from high school. I haven't seen her very much, but a few times in the past 30-something years. And her mother died a couple months ago, so her husband decided to brighten her up a little bit and come out to Hawaii. They were really going to Maui and she wanted to learn to snorkel. And she has been born with a physical disability that makes it very difficult for her to walk far or to really be able to swim well. And she put 2 days onto this trip to Maui to come to Kauai because they read in all the tourist things and look it up about how wonderful KA was. So I helped them go out there. I drove out there, and from Hyena State Park, it was mostly rental cars, even at Bobo's, just packed all the way up. So it was like lined on either side of the road. So I drove them to the end of the road. I dropped them off. I drove back. I got all the way back to Hyena State Park trying to find a legal place to park. I went back up again. I came back, and I pulled off into a space that somebody let go along the road. And I'm not frustrated at the police officer. I got a ticket. But I brought it in. I'm trying to look for it. I dropped it or something. I come walking back to the car. So I come back to the car, and I see the policeman see me. So he wasn't quite to where I was yet. So he comes running over to give me the ticket. So I was like, okay, hi. And he said, what are you doing wrong? And I said, you know, I can see that this is on the road. I was right in with all the rest of them. And he asked me, do you live here? And I said, yes, I do. And he goes, well, you know, this is really awful. And I explained to him that my friend had trouble swimming, and I explained what had happened, that I'd gone to look and that I was sorry. And he was saying, I want to know what you've learned here. And so, he asked for my registration. So then he sees my name, Felicia Cowden, and he goes, oh, Felicia Cowden. I go, yeah, I'm definitely getting a ticket now. He goes, you're going to get three of them. So I was like, okay, you know. And he said, well, what have you learned here? And I said, well, it's really been really clear to me how crowded this area is out here, and I'm sorry to be a part of the problem. And in the balance, the safety of my friend was more important to me. So I did go out and go in the water with her because I didn't want to have that challenge. But for these people who were in the car with me, when he walked away, they were stunned and shocked, and they were so upset by it. And as we started to drive out, it was car after car after car, you know, with all these tickets on it. And she's an 18-year administrative staff person for the Phoenix Police Department. They were like, well, you know, you should look at what's on the cars in front and behind you. Did they go after you specifically? And I said, oh, you know, I'm fine. It's really, you know, not about that. But they said, you know, we came here to Kauai specifically because we were asked, I mean, we were promoted that this was such a safe and good place to go snorkeling. And so we come here, and there is no place to park. And I had showed them what the master plan was and where there's all this beautiful taro patches of Maka'ainana o Makana, you know, the hui that has done the work out there. And, you know, that is way better, that, like, the grave site that's there and all those elements are able to be there. And if you just keep building more parking, more people will come. But we passed, you know, probably a couple, it felt like just a mile of cars that had tickets on it. Ooh. And so they said, I don't think we will ever come here again. You know, they said, we don't want, we thought when we were coming, we were helping Kauai, and we realized that it is too much of an impact. And, you know, they only were here really one full day just to go to that spot. So it's not easy. It's not easy to know how to handle this. You know, people who are on vacation, they don't mean to have a really rough impact. I'm not mad at that police officer. You know, but how do we make it right? How do we do it? I know there's ideas about, like, what do we do with the carrying capacity? And there's ideas of not allowing cars back there or having fines or fees. There, I didn't see anybody else on that whole crowded beach that lived there. And there was only two lifeguards, and there's, you know, probably a couple hundred people in the water. So anyway, it's tough. So I saw that, and it gives me extra motivation on how to be looking at what's coming up when we do a story on this. Do we have a caller?
We do.
Okay. Thank you so much for holding. Aloha. You're on the air.
Yes. Hello.
Hello.
Garbled.
You must have your radio on?
No, I don't. I have it off.
Okay. What's up?
This started. It wasn't like that when I started.
Okay. So what's up?
Can you hear me?
Barely. Do you want to call back?
Radio is off.
Okay. So what's up? What are you thinking about?
Felicia?
Yes. Maybe you should call back. Or what are you thinking? What's on your mind?
Okay. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes. What's on your mind?
Are you on the line?
I am. Maybe have her call back. Call back. Pick it up and tell her that. Okay. So anyway, it's tough what happens with a need for the land and, you know, the competing needs and the road. I guess we lost that caller. Caller, if you're listening, call back. So I think that we have the caller back on. Aloha, you're on the air.
Okay, Felicia,
yes.
Maybe you addressed this. When you were talking about Blue Hole,
yes,
and the diversion of the water, I noticed that Opaika'a Falls is just down to a dribble. And even when we had that huge rain more than a week ago, the Wailua River was filthy brown. All kinds of things were floating down it, and there was only a trickle of water at the falls, and it was clean. Are they diverting all of that water to the same place, or do you know what's happening with it? And every day I look at the falls, and it's just a trickle.
Well, I know that part of the diversion is upstream of that. And my understanding, and I want to claim it that I don't know for sure, but my understanding is that the water is diverted and returned.
Maybe they're returning it to the river because it's not coming down the falls. And I see tourists there going to look at the falls. I'm going to bet they're wondering why they were sent there.
Well, yeah, I do know that it gets diverted and it gets returned in there. I'm not sure if some of it, you know, for some reason right now has stayed away. But when you look at pictures from different decades, it used to be a much, much, much more robust waterfall.
Just a month ago.
I don't know. I can't say what really happened. I don't know.
Maybe somebody can call in.
Yes, maybe an Akamai.
I know it's being diverted. Unusual.
Thank you for calling.
Okay, bye.
Okay.
You know, Felicia, when you're talking about Ka'a Beach and the end of the road there, you know, when my mother was here visiting, we went down there and we circled around and through that rocky parking lot just looking for a spot. And it is frustrating. But you know what? We can't blame it on the tourists. We go so out of our way to invite them here. We spend a lot of money and a lot of energy on bringing those people here. So, you know, they don't know.
No, they don't know. So, you know, and like, in my friend's case, it was just a good way to be able to experience it with somebody who is coming, you know, from a situation of grieving, of losing a parent, and then having a very special moment for herself when, you know, she has physical challenges, that being able to do something like that, it was a first-time experience for her. We have a caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, Felicia. This is Lynn. You know, I live up the road, and actually I'm on the side of the road now going up to Opaika Falls. And what the caller was saying to you is something that I've noticed. In the last few months, there's no water coming down that fall. And it doesn't matter if it rains really hard. I mean, in the past, it would shoot out like a fire hose. And now it's not. It's a steady drip. And so I really suspect, as she does, you know, neither one of us knows for sure, but we really feel like there's monkey business going on because there's just no water.
So monkey business would mean complete diversion.
Well, it just seems like they're letting enough through so that a tourist can go, I saw some water running down that wall. It must have been a waterfall, but I'll tell you, it doesn't look anything at all like it had even 6 months ago.
I will go up and look.
And then another person I would suggest you get a hold of is a guy who came and talked to Nani Rogers' Ahupua'a group. His name is Joe Kamai. And he actually has videos where he has walked across the island, and he shows all the diversions, and he shows how some of the wooden weirs, the gates, are being replaced with steel gates that are in the bedrock. And it's just an incredible video. He also shows on the pathway where you can see a line of tea trees. And if you follow it, you'll end up at a spring. It's just a beautiful video that he has. I would suggest he'd make a really good person to talk to.
Yes, I have spoken with him. I have invited him in here. I will do that again.
Yeah, thanks, Felicia. Mahalo.
Mahalo. You know, the water issue is a constant issue. And, you know, there was embers burning about Mauna Kea for a long time, you know, that has erupted before and then calmed, and erupted before and then calmed. But the water issue is a very, very big deal. Let's take this next caller. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha. So a couple thoughts on the diversion issue. First of all, on Opaika'a Falls, I don't know anything about it per se, but it just strikes me that from an engineering point of view, if you're taking the water above the falls, you'd want to return it below the falls because you're getting a bunch of head right there.
Yeah, that's true.
So they might be able to say, yes, we're returning the water to the stream, but it's not going over the falls. That could be. Anyway, that's just a thought. I don't know any facts on that one. And then in terms of the big waterfall up in Koke'e, they've been diverting from that for years. I mean, before 2491, there was not, you know, for years there, they didn't even have a waterfall. They were taking pretty much everything. And then I think people started making stink about the falls, and they turned them back on a little bit. They actually used to turn the falls on every time we had a hearing.
Yeah.
2491, which was, I don't know, to me that just calls attention to the fact that they're turning it on and off, but now they tend to keep it on, but like the previous caller said, it's less than it would be. And there's a spot, if you go up Waimea Canyon Drive, a little past mile two, where they used to dump water because they're taking more water than they're using. But I think as Adam alluded to, they want to be taking that water just so they have they reserve the right to the water, even though they're not using it all yet. So they used to dump water off the side of the canyon, and you could see like a green stripe going right down. And then they turned the pipe the other way so it was dumping into the field, so it wasn't as obvious. And then last weekend when I was driving up, there's a bunch of guys with big pipes. So it looks like they're finally starting to take that water and move it somewhere. Well, my guess is that they're starting to actually do something with all that water that they've basically been dumping.
Well,
and there's another spot where they dump pretty chronically, which is actually up in the state park, and it's near the where the Boy Scout camp is, up by that ditch. There's a trail that goes right by it, and there's a weir where they're just dumping off the polys. So So all this water that used to go through Waimea Canyon is going off places where it never used to go. So they're just messing with the whole ecosystem because they can. So they can reserve the right to this water.
Who is they? Who is they? Who's they that's doing it? Do you know?
I do not have a bead on them, but I believe it's the ADC.
Okay. And so
I don't know. I mean, it was originally plantations that put the system in. And again, I couldn't tell you which one specifically. I don't want to point fingers, and I'm not sure. But I don't know who's doing it, but I know it's being done. And I'm guessing it's the ADC because they're kind of the umbrella corporation, right? They're
right. Or the
semi-corporate state entity that is doling out the water. I actually gave some engineers a ride up the road about maybe 6 or 8 months ago, and they were working on improving the infrastructure of the water there, and they said they were working for the ADC.
So the ADC is Agribusiness Development Corporation.
That's right. Real Pono-sounding name in it.
Well, so if anybody from the Agribusiness Development Corporation is listening, or anybody of these people who manage the ditches, I really invite you to come in, call in, be in here, and share your side of the story. If you're listening and you're feeling that misinformation is coming out, it's because we don't have enough information. So if the wrong information is being shared, come in and share the right information.
That's right. If you hide under a rock, people are going to think you're doing something bad. And then the other aspect of diversion that I want to address is kind of the invisible diversion that's happening all over. But it's every place there's a well. You know, every place people are draining the aquifer. When I say people, a lot of times it's the county that's doing it. But that has a direct impact on the streams and rivers, too. But you just don't see the actual diversion because it's hundreds of feet under the ground. So that's something we got to look at, too. It's illegal to, well, I don't know if it's illegal, but I don't think there's a legal framework for catching your own water, you know, catching the rainwater and using that. But the way that we're doing it as a society is just unsustainable to the max. We have a stream that runs right by our place in Lawai, and the last year or two, there's basically no flow in that stream, and we're probably couple thousand feet from the well that they use to supply this whole area. So it's like every time I turn on the tap, I know that water is coming from the same aquifer that should be feeding the stream.
Well, and I'm happy to try and contact the Kekaha Ag Association. I believe that's really the ones who manage the water there. And one of the lead guys of that, he's nice. I'm not going to bring his name up, but I will call him and see if he wants to come in and talk about the water management that's happening out there, because it is a big concern to a lot of people, and we need to really be looking at it. And that is a part of the Kuleana of Kauai Community Radio, is giving citizens voices for concerns like this. So thank you so much, caller. Do you have any final thoughts?
That's just my final thoughts is, you know, think about every time you're using water, it's not coming, you know, out of a miracle hole in the mountain. I mean, it's coming out of the island.
Yes, and when we drink it, like in Kilauea, I believe our water really comes from Kapaa. So, like, when I'm unhappy with or I'm allowing the discussion to be that people are unhappy with diverted water every time I take a shower, I am adding to that diverted water. It's all of us, for the most part, who are a part of what's going on.
Yeah, and it's not that we shouldn't divert the water. We're always going to mess with things. That's what humans do. But we got to think about what we're doing and do it, you know, in a way that is purposeful and not just random here and there. And then, you know, 50 years down the road, we're like, oh, this was really a big mistake.
That's right. So in some ways, it can be like the alcoholic blaming the liquor store, for those of us who either waste energy or waste water or different layers of waste.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it's done smart, if it's done well, it can be a benefit to the island, because you're taking places that have more water that they can use. You can move that water and actually enrich the life on other places of the island. But if you're just doing it to, you know, for power and for money, then that's not the right impetus.
Yes, although sometimes the water that goes out into the ocean is actually really, really important. It keeps the water in the near shore areas cooler, and it keeps the reef alive, and it feeds those fish. So everything has an impact.
Yeah, that's the truth of it, is everything has an impact.
Everything has an impact.
You know, we're not going to not impact, but at least do it, you know, with the knowledge that you're impacting and know what you're doing.
That's right. So thank you so much. I've got a couple of callers holding, so I want to let the next one come through. Thank you so much.
Aloha.
Aloha. Aloha. Thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Uncle Saul.
Hey, Uncle Saul.
I've been listening to you, and then first of all, I've been listening to that what that brother just got to say. I like that. You know, I like when, because I listen to his voice and everything. I saw white brother fighting for the water, which is good. But I'm actually calling you, Felicia, about Kel.
Yes, so his daughter is in the studio with us, and we, you know, spoke about him and when his event is, and so she's listening.
Okay, well, my name is Uncle Saul. Can you tell her that my name, who I am?
She's smiling. Talk to Uncle Saul, Val.
Aloha.
Val.
Hi.
Hi, honey.
Hi.
This you know, because I never seen it inside of the obituary or anything, honey. You know me, I love you.
Mahalo, Uncle.
And, you know, Uncle, I will be there for you.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
You know, I saw what happened, but everything okay? You need my help?
I'm good.
But maybe we'll see each other at the service.
Is this on the 14th?
Yes, 14th, 9 to 12 a.m.
Is your call in?
Yes.
You depart.
Thank you so much. And I got a couple people holding right behind you. So thank you for calling in and giving Uncle Calvin's family love.
Okay, aloha.
Aloha. Aloha, thank you for holding. You're on the air.
Hello, Felicia?
Yes.
Okay, hi, I'm Joanna Wheeler.
Hi, Joanna.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Wonderful. So anyway, I was calling essentially to just let the community know about this new group that we have on Facebook. It's essentially something that we want for people to get inspired to keep their beaches clean.
Okay.
And what we're doing is we just want people to come on Facebook or just do it on their own. Basically, we want people to keep the beaches clean by bringing, you know, a bag of a garbage bag and pick up whatever they see on the beach, because as much as the county does and as much as there is this group cleanups, because of the weather, next thing you know, the beaches are difficult to keep clean unless we all do a little bit. So if all of us do a little bit, we can do a lot of good.
Okay, so that is Surf Rider Beach Cleanup. What would be the Facebook page?
No. It is in addition to what Surf Rider does. It's for...
Can you clearly tell us? I've got two callers waiting.
Our Clean Beaches Personal Patrol. Our Clean Beaches Personal Patrol.
Clean Beaches
Personal Patrol.
Okay.
And this will be, whenever you go, you take a couple of pictures of what you see places on the group, and you can just, you know, inspire the community by your friends and family, and that's it, you know. And thank you so much for your time and for what you do for the community.
Okay, thank you so much. Aloha.
Okay. Aloha.
Aloha, thank you for holding. You're on the air. Hello, you're on the air.
Felicia, you had callers to if they had information on the hydro.
Yes.
And the Wai'ahi Hydro has been up there for close to 100 years,
mm-hmm.
and as has the diversion. So any change in the water flow to Opaika Falls really doesn't have anything to do with that hydro. So I just wanted to encourage you to contact KIUC and get the facts about that. But that hydro, there is not any new hydro up there, it's the same hydro that's been up there, and so the changes really don't have anything to do with that.
Okay, so help me here real quick, because I want to make sure, and I definitely, and if KIUC is listening, I would love to have them come in, and I will give a call again to them. Okay, so when the water goes around or gets diverted there near Opaika'a Falls, you're saying...
It's actually not near. It's actually a few miles up.
A few miles up. So then it goes, you're saying it goes through two hydro plants. And is that correct? Or no?
I do not know how many hydro plants. I just know that the hydro that's up there has been there for close to 100 years.
Yeah, just like in Wainiha, right?
Yes.
Okay. So it's in there, and then... All right, and so you're saying that that is not going to Kapaya Falls, the Kapaya Power Plant. Am I hearing the correction right?
No, what I'm correcting on is that you've had some callers in that are saying that Opaika Falls are not flowing the way that they used to,
yes.
And that it's down to a trickle, and what I'm saying is that hydro has been up there close to 100 years. So changes are in likely climate or due to other factors, not due to that hydro. There isn't a new hydro that's gone up there that's making Opaika Falls dry up.
What I thought I heard is that people didn't know why Opaika Falls was drying up. They're saying it is drying up. Something's up, and they don't know what it is. That's what I thought I heard.
Well, what it sounded like to me is that people were thinking that it was due to the hydro, and I just would like them to have the information that hydro has been there providing power for years and years and years, and so the changes in Opaika Falls are not due to the hydro that's up there.
Okay, that would sound consistent to me. Thank you so much.
Okay, aloha.
Aloha. Aloha, you're on the air.
Hello, is it me?
Yes.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to, I'm calling in to what that brother was saying about the water situation on the west side.
Okay.
Who was responsible for this? So the guy responsible for all this water diversion and wasting is the old plantation irrigation manager, Landis Ignacio. He runs the Agriculture Association, which maintains all the ditches and all the diversions on the west side. And he gets kicked back to the state to run that. So it's in his best interest to keep all this stuff going. And about the water we knock on the canyon, seems to me that they're wasting the water. Like the water was taking the water for some kind of future project online so they can clean the water.
Right. And you're breaking up pretty bad. I'm hearing that. I'll try and give Landis a call and see if he is willing to help clarify what sounds like concern.
Yeah, am I still breaking up?
You're breaking up pretty hard. I got one other caller, and I got to do the county council report, and then Jazz with John's going to start. Is there a final thought that you have?
Yeah, the final thought I have is we ran off the place, which is Unit L, supposed to be the new unit hunting Unit L. They're going to rent it out 3,000 acres to a cattle farmers. I think that's why they're wasting water up there.
Okay, Unit L hunting area in Kekaha.
Waimea Heights.
Waimea Heights.
Yes, it was supposed to open up this year, but then I heard a rumor that this guy got a 3,000-acre permit to ranch cattle up there. So maybe that's why they were trying to put the water up there so they can justify the use.
Okay, so I heard the word rumor, so we'll know that that's just a suspicion, so we'll figure that out. Thank you so much, caller, and you can call me off air, and maybe we can research that, and we'll find out what is the accurate story, because this is the first I've heard that. So,
this is a fact. They closed the hunting unit down. It was supposed to open this year. They closed it down. That is a fact.
Okay, they've closed down Hunting Unit L, 3,000 acres, Waimea Heights, that hunting area.
That is a fact, yeah.
Okay, so we will look into what happened with that, and you can help me do that.
Okay.
Thank you so much. So this is Kauai Soapbox. I'm not going to be able to take other calls. I know I've had some people holding. Thank you for calling. We'll get them next. It's Jazz with John is coming up. Val, So much love to you and your family. Thank you so much for being in here.
Thank you.
Marshall, thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure as always.
And we'll hear the county council report, and then we're off to Jazz with John. Aloha from Kauai Soapbox.
Aloha. I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Here's the county council report for the week of August 3rd. There will be a regular council meeting Wednesday at 8:45 a.m. in the council chambers in Lihue. Here's some highlights from the agenda. The Director of Finance transmits for council consideration proposed amendments to Ordinance Number B-2015-796 as amended relating to the fiscal year 2015-2016 operating budget. This is proposed draft bill number 2593. Councilmember Hooser transmits for council consideration a resolution proposing a charter amendment relating to public access, open space, and natural resources preservation fund. This is resolution 2015-53. Council Chair Raposo transmits for council consideration a resolution authorizing a performance audit of the Kauai Humane Society pursuant to the Kauai County Charter. This is resolution number 2015-55. The Director of Finance requests council approval to accept and spend the appropriations provided to the County of Kauai in the General Appropriations Act of 2015, Act 119, SLH 2015, in the amount of $7,100,000 from the State of Hawaii for several projects and programs. The prosecuting attorney requests council approval to apply for, receive, and spend federal funds in the amount of $520,390 for the Kauai Victim of Crime Act expansion project for the period September 1, 2015 through July 31, 2018. Council Chair Raposo requests the presence of Sina Pruner, PE Engineering Program Manager, State of Hawaii Department of Health, to provide a briefing on Act 120-2015 relating to cesspools, its impact on Kauai residents, and the availability and qualification criteria for the cesspool upgrade conversion or connection income tax credit. There are three claims against the county this week as transmitted by the county clerk. Under committee reports, the Planning Committee received for the record communications from the Director of Planning requesting agenda time to brief the committee on the status of the general plan update. Committee Chair Chalk requests the Director of Planning, the Deputy Director of Planning, the Director of Economic Development provide a briefing and an update on proposed agritourism legislation that the administration is developing. This was received for the record. The Committee of the Whole has approved as amended Bill 2590, repealing the article relating to barking dogs. This is also under bills for the second reading. Resolutions also include 2015-53, proposing a charter amendment relating to the Public Access, Open Space, and Natural Resources Preservation Fund. Bills for the first reading include proposed draft bill number 2593 for an ordinance relating to the operating budget of the county for the fiscal year July 1, 2015 through June 30, 2016, by revising the amounts estimated in the general fund, highway fund, liquor fund, solid waste fund, sewer fund, and COF fund. Units 2, 3, and 4 collective bargaining increases, and the amount is $912,369. For more information, visit the county's website at www.kauai.gov. Until next week, I'm John Gordon for KKCR News. Aloha. And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, Kauai's community radio station. And be sure and stay tuned for Jazz with John coming up next. Jazz with John is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Coffee, Kamoa Ukulele, and Tiki Aniki.
Kauai Coffee, 100% pure Hawaiian, single-origin, GMO-free coffee. Grown and roasted here on the Garden Island at retail locations island-wide, on all the Hawaiian Islands, and at our estate on Highway 540 between Kalaheo and Ali'ali, where walking tours and coffee tasting are also available. More information and ordering online at kauaicoffee.com.
Kamoa Ukulele Company, dedicated to building high-quality bell tone instruments.